End of the Bad Quaker Podcast, where liberty is our mission. Today is Friday, November 1st, 2013, although you probably won't hear this podcast until Saturday, November 2nd, when it probably will make it actually on the internet. And this is podcast number 357. I'm getting a little bit of echo there, but we'll try to work with it. And my name is Ben Stone, and on the line with me is my sometime co-host and full-time daughter, Kai. Hi, Kai.
Hello. I am waving to you from the top of a mountain in Virginia.
Oh, no, you're back on the Appalachian Trail, lost again.
No, I'm actually on a delightful raw milk dairy farm.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
So we have a big announcement to make today before we get into the podcast.
Announcement. Does there need to be a drum roll?
Yes, there should be a drum roll. We should actually have, like, trumpets. One Tom Woods has an interview that's very recent with Ron Paul. And in it, he directly asks Ron Paul the magic question. Ron Paul, are you or have you ever been an anarchist? And Ron Paul...
The anarchist party?
Yeah. And Ron Paul answers him very clearly, no, Ron Paul is not an anarchist. Ron Paul presented or volunteered the information that he doesn't see how competing police forces can provide security, and he maintains his faith in government and in the Constitution. And he made the really odd statement, and this is a quote, Congress will eventually reflect the people, end quote. I'm going to read that again. Congress will eventually reflect the people. Now, if that is not blind, unadulterated faith in the state, I don't know what is.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, and it's almost irritating because he uses anarchist writers as selling points, you know, like basically he has used Rothbard and all of these libertarian anarchist philosophers, and he's used them as an endorsement for him, and yet the truth comes out that he doesn't really believe any of it.
Yeah, I'm not shocked, I'm not surprised, and I'm kind of relieved that finally, after all this time, he's truthful. Because just right. Like what you're saying, when he made his final speech on the House floor before he left Congress, there were all of these references to voluntarism and you know, non-aggression and things like this. He was making all of these shout-outs and all of these little, you know, these hints that ANCAPs all around the world heard and took as like a hidden message. Yes, he really is one of us. And they were just giddy. ANCAPs around the world were literally giddy that Ron Paul had done his little secret shout-out to them. And now we know that the entire thing, he was just using people. That's it.
Yep, that's it. Just like any other politician.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we're still getting that echo. Wow. It's coming from my end.
Oh.
Anyway, so now we haven't had a podcast together in quite some time. We've got a lot of stuff to catch up on. You had you're having podcast withdrawals, and you ended up, I guess, doing the Pete Townsend thing, preaching from a chair in a bar, yelling about George Washington or something, right?
Oh, man. It just, you know, if you don't get it out every now and again, it just sort of bubbles forth at kind of inopportune times. And it was just a social setting, and somebody casually mentioned something about the founding fathers, and somebody mentioned George Washington, and I just, the next thing I knew, had said what I really thought of George Washington, and people just looked at me like, huh, she's actually insane. Okay. It was, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, right, this is not my friends on the internet. This is normal people.
So you found yourself standing in a chair screaming at the top of your lungs, who are you? Who are you? Well, your band members are quietly saying, you know, we're going to have to think about an institutionalization.
No, my band has already stopped plugging in my guitar and stopped telling me when the band practices are. And they're Sid Barrett-ing me.
Yeah, and in case anybody is wondering what we're talking about, that's a reference to, first it was a reference to Pete Townsend and his practical, or his almost, I shouldn't say practical, his almost breakdown that resulted in the song Who Are You? And then the other references to the one of the original founders of Pink Floyd, Sid Barrett, who was both a genius and unfortunately quite insane. And, lost his mind very publicly and very tragically.
Well, you can't really be both. You can't be a genius and sane. Because a genius inherently means that you are intelligent enough to see the truth behind things. And when you begin looking at the truth, it will drive you insane.
I'm going to try. Go ahead.
Yeah, are we still having feedback issues?
Yeah, a little bit. I was going to try a little bit of a sound toy there on with my mixer to see if that helped. I don't know. Could you hear any of the echoing?
Not terribly, but...
I think what I just did helped. So
okay.
So anyway, but this is not the Freedom Fiends, and that is not, and this is not Creamy Radio Audio, although that's where I learned all these neat audio tricks, so... Sid Barrett was, this is probably, we didn't plan on this being the old timey rock and roll channel.
But to be fair, we didn't plan on this being anything.
Well, that's true. That's true. I'd rather talk about Sid Barrett than George Washington, though, because in Sid Barrett's entire life, he never murdered anybody that I'm aware of. Never pulled a guy out just simply because the guy wanted to go home to his family because he hadn't been paid in months.
And there was starving.
And was literally starving to death, had walked his shoes off. His shoes had just disintegrated, and he had rags wrapped around his feet, and he's living in horrible conditions. Well, Washington is in full uniform in a cabin in the middle of the winter. He's got a cabin to live in. Well, the soldier is in a tent in the snowstorm, and he wants to go home to his family because his family he doesn't even know what condition they're in. And Washington murders the guy. Now, that, to my knowledge, Sid Barrett never did that.
But Sid Barrett's the insane one, and George Washington's a hero.
Yeah, they cut the side of a mountain to make an idol to the guy. And
this is the kind of truth-seeking that will make you insane.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, back to Ron Paul. So in this interview with Tom Woods, Tom asks him what would happen if a true libertarian president like Ron Paul were to take control, what would it actually look like? And Ron Paul said kind of some of the things that a lot of us have said would have happened had Ron Paul been elected president. Well, the first thing, he wouldn't sign any bills, so he would almost immediately be the target of hate by Congress. And the only thing that he really, as president, has the legitimate power to do is to bring the troops home and close the military bases abroad, including Gitmo. So, you know, so like basically day one, he would start closing military bases, bringing the troops home, closing Gitmo and that kind of stuff, and refusing to sign any new laws into effect. And so essentially he'd be impeached by about the third or fourth day.
Yeah, and that's pretty much exactly what we expect, you know, would be the outcome of that. It's the only logical outcome.
Or the other way around. It's according to what you think about things like the Kennedy assassination and the other Kennedy assassination and Martin Luther King assassination and the Ronald Reagan attempted assassination. And according to what you think about all these different things, I've always contended that if Ron Paul ever was to even seriously threaten becoming president, they'd just pop him. There'd be a lone gunman, and he would be crazed, and he would, of course, he would have no associations with any, you know, any organizations other than the fact that he'd been trained by the FBI and had some associations with the CIA and maybe had dinner at the Bush's house the night before or something like that. But other than that, you know.
Right. Well, and he would definitely be a paranoid paramilitary, militia, patriot style.
Or Muslim,
but I doubt it. Because, the Muslim thing, that's really kind of wearing thin. It is. Well, you know, and Hollywood's against it, and it's very unfashionable to be anti-Muslim these days. However, it is highly fashionable to be anti-Tea Party.
That's true. You know, in Cincinnati, there's an ad, and I am definitely not into the politics of who should be elected in Cincinnati or what their votes should come out like or whatever. But there's this ad all over the television in the Cincinnati area in the singular phrase. Anyway, there's this TV ad that throws up some, you know, some, what do they call those local issues? Yeah, issue. Like issue one or issue two or issue five or whatever it is.
Right.
And they're saying, don't be fooled. This issue is a scheme by the Tea Party to raise your taxes and expand government. And I thought, Now, I don't put anything past the Tea Party. you know? Because
I don't put anything past any politician.
Yeah. Because essentially, Tea Party people are basically just people who want to use the government for what they want to use it for and condemn other people for, you know, for what those people want to use it for. So, I mean, right. You know, one set of thugs is the same as another set of thugs. What does it matter? What, you know, what, whether the whip you're being beaten with is blue or red is really beside the point.
Right.
But it really struck me odd that, you know, that here this group is saying the Tea Party is out to raise your taxes and expand government. And they're saying that in a wave of ads that's just swamping local TV here. And I'm thinking in my mind, you know, is that really? Has the Tea Party gone that far out from their roots? Or do these people who are putting on this commercial believe that they can just pretty much say anything to the voters and the voters will believe it?
Well, you know, I mean, there's that great line at the end of Animal Farm, the animals looked from man to pig and pig to man and could tell no difference. You know, it's they're all the same. And whether they're voting to increase taxes or not, they're still the Tea Party is still there to steal your money and commit crimes of aggression against other people. And so it doesn't matter. Like they're equally horrible principles, you know, and I get to the point these days where I have almost no tolerance for people making excuses for like political, you know, oh, you know, I thought the constitutionalists were better. Why would you think that? They're just as terrible. Look at what they're doing, you know?
Yeah, that was one thing with the Ron Paul statement, that he still had faith in the Constitution. And when he said that, I was just like, in my mind, I was thinking, you either one of two things. you never actually read Rothbard's writing about the Constitution and about that time frame and about the signing of the Constitution. You either didn't read it or you believe Rothbard was a liar, one or the other.
Right.
Because you can't read that and understand what Rothbard wrote about the signing of the Constitution and the passing of the Constitution. You can't read that and then say, yes, this is all true, I believe it, and the Constitution is good. The two things are opposite. It's like standing there looking at the sun, looking directly at the sun with your eyes on a clear day and saying, it's nighttime. Either you're not seeing the sun, you're blind or whatever, you're not seeing the sun, or you're lying. There's not a third option.
Yep. Or you're insane.
Well, I suppose that could be, yeah. But I don't think Ron Paul's insane. Of course, then again, you know, for a long time, I didn't think Syd Barrett was insane.
Or Pete Townsend. These things come on quickly. You don't expect it. You're just going about your day-to-day life, and the next thing you know, you're crazy.
Nobody expects insanity. Well, that's where they're wrong. Everybody should expect it all the time, because we're all right on the edge.
Some of us have dived headfirst in.
Oh, my. So speaking of, the big news today, I suppose, is this shooter at LAX, and they're both identifying him as a TSA agent, as a former TSA agent, and as someone having nothing to do with the TSA. I popped over, and his Facebook page shows that it indicates that he's a employee of the TSA, but of course you can just, I mean, anybody can write that on their own wall. You don't have to have, you know, so who knows, but, pretty messed up either way.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, I haven't really had a whole lot of exposure to current news events, so I'm not really familiar with any of the,
well, it's all changing by the moment anyway. It's like any of these stories, when they actually happen, you get wave after wave of wild assumptions and absolute lies, and, you know, and then they throw so many different stories at you, and eventually the official story starts to take shape, and sometimes it matches the original stories and sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, you never know. It's according to what their agenda is going to eventually be out of it.
Yeah, and the news media is just the, you know, false front that the state puts on to give out its lies and propaganda. And so even trying to decipher what the possible truth is based on the lies that you're being fed is really like trying to find a needle in a haystack.
You know, I saw a story, this was several days ago, and it has nothing to do with anything other than the fact that the media, you know, the media just says anything they're told to say, whatever stories are fed to them, they just parrot it, and they don't think about the things that they're saying at all. There was a story coming out of Sacramento in California, and the headline said, "Rise of Cattle Rustlings Contributing to Increase in Beef Prices." And I looked at that and I thought,
surely they cannot be saying what they think they're saying.
So I clicked on the link, because here's the thing. I mean, you think about it. Let's say there's so much cattle rustling going on. There's so many people stealing cattle that it's actually affecting the prices. Well, how would stealing cattle affect the prices? Let's just think about this for a moment. Well, if you're going to steal cattle, what are you going to do with them after you steal them?
Are you going to sell them?
Are you not going to sell them back onto the market cheaper than the rancher was going to in the first place?
That's the whole point of stealing.
Generally, yeah, with a commodity like that, you know, it's not like, it's different with something like, you know, shoplifting. Shoplifting drives up the prices, for people, because the shoplifter is stealing something that now doesn't get resold.
Right, and he's taken out of the economic chain.
Yeah, exactly. And he's consuming something, because most shoplifters, other than professionals, I'm talking about just somebody who like steals grapes in the grape aisle or whatever.
That's not stealing. That's sampling.
But let's say somebody who steals gum from the next to the checkout line or whatever. They're not only stealing something from the store, they're also not buying it. So it's hitting the economy in two different directions. But if you're stealing cattle, well, first off, you have to have a fairly large operation to pull that off. It's not just like a guy with a pickup truck running out there snatching one heifer at a time or whatever, right? So
get him in the trailer.
So probably what we're talking about is organized crime. I would
imagine that the only way that this is legitimately an issue is if you're running a scheme where you are being paid to pick up cattle from a location and drive them to another location, and you just never take them to the agreed location. You just take them off and sell them.
Which is what organized crime does very often in trucking.
Right.
They're very prominent that's a very common way for organized crime to steal things. But when they do this, they always dump it back on the market at a lower price because they need to get rid of it quickly and they don't have much invested in it. So their profit ratio is dramatically better than the rancher who has had to go to all the problems of raising the cattle, right?
Right.
So actually, on a large scale, cattle rustling will cause the prices to fall unnaturally. Now, this will hurt the cattle ranchers, of course, because they're not making a profit at all. So this headline doesn't make any sense. So I click on it and I start reading it. And it lays out the thing. It's like, because so many cattle in California's Central Valley have been stolen, this is the reason why you're seeing beef prices go up in grocery stores in California. This is their argument.
Okay, I can see that. Because here's a scenario I can see. If they're getting stolen and taking across state lines to be sold elsewhere, then the price of beef in California specifically could be rising.
That's possible, but most likely, again, if it's in that kind of scale, it's organized crime, and they probably have a deal with a butcher. Because the butchers are in a union, the truck drivers are in a union, and who's in charge of both the unions, you know?
Right.
So typically, you know, the whole story just doesn't make any sense until I get right to the end and the key phrase is right there in like right at the very end. You know, most people don't read to the end of a story anyway. They read the headline and maybe one or two paragraphs and that's pretty much it.
Right.
But if you get all the way to the end of the story, the key phrase comes in that Governor Brown in California just signed a bill regarding changing the way punishment is given out for cattle rustling and setting aside cattle rustling as a different crime than just regular stealing. So the whole story is to justify some wacky bill that probably has 20 other things attached to it that have nothing to do with cattle rustling. But it had to go through because who would vote, you know, who's pro cattle rustling? Who would vote for the cattle rustlers? So it had to go through. Everybody had to vote for it because otherwise it's going to come up in your next campaign. Well, you know, Democrat Tom over here was pro cattle rustling. He wouldn't even support legislation to stop the cattle rustlers, you know. So you have to vote for it, even though the cattle rustling part is nonsensical. But, you know, layered into that is like extra funding for SWAT teams or extra funding for, you know, for some park in Mendocino County or whatever that just happens to be right on the driveway that goes to Governor Brown's winter house or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so that's got to be the source of this whole story. And then the other thing that struck me was, so why are cattle prices going up? Well, the San Joaquin Valley and the Central Valleys in California, San Joaquin and Sacramento, They do have cattle ranching. There is cattle ranching. But if you compare the quantity of cattle ranching that goes on in California and you compare that to like Wyoming and Montana and Nebraska, California is a drop in the bucket. Most of the cattle, most of the beef prices that are being affected right now are being affected because of that sudden ice storm that came through Montana and Nebraska and Wyoming, killing off thousands and thousands and thousands of beef cattle, like in, was that mid-October, early October, I believe, if I recall.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so beef prices spiked. So the dirty, filthy, lying politicians made up a bill that they could stuff all kinds of personal things into, tag it as the cattle rustling bill to stop cattle rustling or whatever, that no one would dare vote against, and they jammed that.
In reality, probably contains stricter regulations for trucking companies that are being hired to transport cattle, which tightens the hold of the unions.
And drives prices, and drives beef prices up, probably.
Yeah.
Because what is the real job of the media? I mean, reality is the job of the media is to lie to people and keep them happy with what government is doing to them.
Yep. That's all it's there for.
Hey, let's stop for a break, and we're going to throw in some commercials. And we'll be right back with some more with Kai and Ben Stone on Bad Quaker Podcast.
Yay!
The Electronic Frontier Foundation, or EFF, fights to protect your rights in the digital world. When a patent troll threatened podcasters, they fought back. EFF has also defended your right to encryption and has sued the NSA to end the government's mass, suspicionless surveillance. There are different ways you can help EFF, from donations, to signing petitions, to writing your representatives, to just spreading the word. Find out more at EFF.org. That's EFF.org.
How would you like to do something to support BadQuaker.com? Here's how easy it is. If you're already going to buy something from Amazon, go to BadQuaker.com first. Click on any of the buttons for Amazon. Once at Amazon, shop like you normally would. You'll pay the same price for the things you buy from Amazon, but Amazon will give BadQuaker.com a tiny portion of that purchase. It's amazingly easy to shop at Amazon. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be supporting BadQuaker.com. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for sticking with us through the commercial break. And this is Ben Stone back with Kai. And
hello.
Hello. I can't remember how long it's been since you did a podcast with me. It's been probably a couple months at least, I would think.
Probably since like June.
Going back somewhere around Porkfest or so.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking.
Yeah, I've been kind of crazy busy.
Speaking of Porkfest, I've been chatting with a person who I met at Porkfest, a guy named Antonio Bueller, and I was supposed to do a podcast with him today, but some things came up, and so we're probably going to record that either tomorrow or the next day or something, sometime over the weekend, and I'll try to get it on the inner tubes probably Monday or so. And a little teaser for the future, I have a podcast, an interview coming up with my friend in Utah, Jake from Utah, as we like to joke around.
Oh, hey, isn't he the most interesting man in the Liberty Movement?
Jake Shannon. Hold on, let me give the whole thing. Jake Shannon, the most interesting man in the Liberty Movement. Yeah, Jake's a good guy. I really, really like Jake. I've known him for a while. And he is really amazing. I mean, he really is amazing. And I'm probably going to talk to him on Sunday, and I'm not sure when we'll be able to broadcast that, maybe Tuesday or Wednesday, something like that. But it's always fun to talk to Jake anyway, because he's really, really interesting. So what's been going on with you? Where did I take that off from? Oh, yeah, from Porkfest. So we probably haven't done a podcast since about Porkfest. And you've been working, you've been on the road. going from town to town, juggling chainsaws or something like that, right?
Just about. Yeah, I've been doing the Renaissance festivals all summer. I'm on my last one of the year now, and then I'm going to run around like a crazy person this whole winter, trying to eventually make it out to Arizona for the spring.
And unfortunately, I don't know if you feel like bringing this up or not, but unfortunately, through people that I trusted, and I introduced you to the Lakota, what's it called? Lakota Free Bank? Free Lakota Bank, which it appears at this point is an entirely made-up scam. And so we've had the crushing news that everything probably that you had invested in that is gone, which is really unfortunate. And once again, I feel bad about that because I was taken in by that mostly because of two people. First off, you know, Russell Means had endorsed him, and that meant a lot to me. And the survival, what would we call him? Armchair survivalist Jack Spearco had endorsed it, and I was taken in totally by it. And I had a couple of years ago, I had said, "Well, looks like a pretty good thing to me." And unfortunately, you know, you have probably lost everything that you had in there because of that, and that would be, you know, my fault over that. But,
well, no, I mean, it's not your fault. You know, at the end of the day, the only person who has aggressed upon me in this matter is the person running that website. And, you know, I've thought about that a lot, especially in terms of, you know, should we seek legal recourse in retribution for this? And honestly, I've come to the conclusion that the entire point of having that silver was to have currency that was not state-sponsored. And so to use the fist of the state to go after somebody who has aggressed upon me using that is inconsistent with morality. And so at this point, I can't physically go get repercussions. You know, I can't physically go and get any satisfaction from him. And so the only thing left for me to do is to learn and say, okay, well, next time I'm going to be a little bit wiser.
Yeah. I think his whole song and dance was so, you know, cause he's the guy behind that. His name escapes me for the moment. But anyway, he's a very professional at the kind of scam that he was pulling. And it's not the first one that he has pulled. He did a water magnet scam prior to that where, you know, you have these magic magnets that are near a water line and somehow your water is purified from it. And he had a good scam going with that. And unfortunately, you know, in my series on going beyond civil disobedience, I had talked about how people in our movement need to learn from grifters and scam artists and people like that who run cons. We need to learn from them and learn how they do what they do and essentially do that stuff to the government. Unfortunately, you know, what I've seen, I hate to say this, but what I've seen among so many people in the liberty movement in general, is that so many of them are so gullible, they don't understand how basic scams work. And they don't understand how, you know, how con men work. And they're so gullible to these things. Maybe, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we shouldn't be associated with them because they're just going to see the weakness among liberty people and just, you know, clean our clocks instead, like this guy did.
Well, I think a good, you know, a good thing to remember is that when you have an autocratic society, when you have a society that governs itself, that is self-governing, that is voluntary in nature, all of the interactions are voluntary. And so our biggest thing that we can do as a community to protect ourselves from getting preyed on by that is if it happens, use the technology we have. Make it known. Make it known to every single person that you come in contact with that this is illegitimate, this is a scam. You know, we have the ability to ruin a person's reputation in seconds, literally. Look at what the name escapes me. The people with the Guy Fawkes masks.
Oh, yeah, Anonymous.
Anonymous. I couldn't remember their name. Look at what Anonymous can do to a person. You know, they decide that they don't like you. They decide that you're a bully or that you have overstepped your bounds in some manner. They can all but destroy your life using the technology that we have at our fingertips in seconds. You know, and that's our job. It is our job to police ourselves.
Yeah, and speaking of which, I should be more clear. The organizations that I was slamming there is the American Open Currency Standard, run by Rob Gray, and the Free Lakota Bank and Mulligan Mint, TSP Mint, and I'm not sure who else is associated with that. But that's all sort of sock puppets of Rob Gray, and he was the mastermind behind the whole thing. And there's currently a huge lawsuit against him. His business has been a judge has ordered a trustee to go in and take over all the assets and make I don't know what the terminology is, but like a inventory to see what's there and what can be divided up among the creditors and all this kind of thing. Because he has, there's literally millions in silver that has somehow vanished, and he appears to be at the heart of the issue there. So that's specifically who I'm talking about. American Open Currency Standard, Mulligan Mint, Rob Gray, the Free Lakota Bank, and TSP Mint, which is, TSP is for the Survival Podcast, and they have their own little weird, weird coin that they're pushing from the TSP Mint that has a Spartan warrior and the phrase something like save the Republic. Isn't that an interesting thing to be pushing? Save the Republic. That goes back to that silly Ron Paul notion. Say that again.
Why would you want to? It's like, oh, look at this terrible poor dragon that's laying here half dead. Come on, guys, let's save him. Let's have everybody pitch him here. Let's get him back on his feet. Let's stitch him back up. No! Kill it! Kill it dead! You've just watched it destroy half your village and brutally slaughter people in front of your eyes, and you've half killed it, and now you want to go heal it? Why?
What did Lysander Spooner say? Something to the effect that the Constitution has either allowed such a government or has been a complete failure to stop it. And either way, whether it be one or the other, the Constitution has no reason to exist, because it is either an evil thing that has created what, now I'm paraphrasing, but it is either an evil thing that has created this monster that we see, or it has been entirely helpless to stop it. And either way, it's useless. It's worse than useless, because people have blind faith in it. And that faith is how government is able to do these things to us.
Yeah, it's the faith that makes people act irrationally. It's this core belief in an idea that cannot be measured. It can't be proven. It can't be held and touched. And it is an intangible emotion that is ruling their lives, you know. And it's the statism, to me, comes down to a core fundamental belief that individual people are better than other people. And when you boil all of it down to that and you say, I am a better person than you, and you, I am more equal than you. I get more of it because I am me. That is the belief that begins the core of statism. And it doesn't matter what that belief is wrapped up in. It doesn't matter if it's because I'm a priest, because I'm a lawyer, because I'm a police officer, because I'm a military personnel. I don't care what robe you're wrapped in. It's that core belief of, I am better than you, and I'm willing to use violence to achieve my means.
I'll take this a little further, even. I was listening to an interview with a person who's growing in prominence in the liberty movement right now. And I was listening to an interview with this person, and the person made the comment that, that people in general are really, really stupid, and people are too stupid to reject government. And that's the reason why we should use violence against government to kickstart a revolution to kick government out. Because the bulk of people are too stupid to reject government. And as he was saying this, I thought, you know, that's the exact argument that somebody like Nancy Pelosi or, you know, John McCain.
That is believing that you are better than other people.
Yeah.
And that's the core idea of statism.
And wrapping it in the liberty movement or wrapping it in some kind of anti-government rhetoric doesn't change the fact that that's really what it is. It's just begging to destroy the government we have so that that person can be the head of the new government that forms afterwards.
Did we talk about this on the last podcast, or was that just a phone call that I made to you where I talked about that I wanted a T-shirt of Ron Paul as Che Guevara?
I think we just talked about it on a phone call.
I want that. I want Ron Paul as Che Guevara. It doesn't matter who is in charge. You're still saying that it is legitimate to use violence against humans to achieve means.
Yeah.
And it's not. It is completely illegitimate to use violence and aggression against somebody to get your means, to get your, you know, whatever you want.
Yeah, to fulfill your agenda. And even if you disguise your agenda as liberty, you tape the name liberty on it, if you're planning on using violence to achieve that, you're no different than all the statists or Che Rivera or anybody else who's willing to kill and murder for their cause.
Yep. And in reality, the only way to get rid of the state is to produce a market that has no desire for the state. If there's no market for the state, there will be no state. Right now, there's only a state because the market demands that there be a state.
Yeah, and that's the other half of this. These very often the same person that will tell you that we need to have violence to throw the government out will tell you that, prohibitions won't work. This was proved in the 1920s. Prohibition doesn't work. Prohibition of marijuana doesn't work. You know, outlawing guns won't work. Outlawing, you know, big Slurpees in downtown New York won't work. Prohibitions never work. And the same person telling you that will then very often tell you that we have to have violence to overthrow the government. Well, you know, you don't have faith in the market. The market will get rid of government when the market decides it doesn't need government anymore. And the market is the will of people. And when the will of people want something, whether that be government or Slurpees or drugs or alcohol, when the market wants something, no amount of force, no authority can stop the market from getting it.
Absolutely. And in fact, when you restrict the supply of something, the demand for it will grow exponentially.
Very true.
So the more that you say we can't have it, we can't have it, we can't have it, the more that you want it as a human being.
Yeah, that's, Brian, my son, Kai's brother, was over at the house not too long ago. And our grandson, he brought our grandson over to visit, Miles, cute little guy. He's almost a year old. And we were just having so much fun. My wife and I were having so much fun watching Miles. And you could just see the gears turning in his head. He would spot something like, wall plug where the electricity wall plug. And he would go straight towards it and look at you like, I know I'm not supposed to touch this, but I'm touching it. And, you know, it's safe because there's no wires plugged in or whatever. But then he didn't get a reaction out of us for that. So the next thing is, I'm headed toward the stairs. You better stop me. I'm headed toward the stairs. You know, you could just see it in his eyes, like, hey, hey, this is a fun game. I'm doing what I'm not supposed to. You know, I'm messing with Grandma and Pop. I'm going where I'm not supposed to go. I'm going to try to open a cupboard. Watch me. I'm headed for the kitchen. I'm going to open a cupboard. But this is a human tendency to, whenever you prohibit something, there is an immediate curiosity to say, why can't I have that?
Yeah, and so the response is not to violently, you know, this is why anarcho-socialism is fundamentally flawed, in my opinion, is because you can't force anarchy. You can't, that's forcing a negative. You can't force people to not have statism in their core.
It sounds like an old thing from like Hogan's Heroes sitcom from the 60s where the Nazi commander demands that everyone have a good time.
Yeah.
You will enjoy yourself.
It's ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous. And it's gotten to the point with me where, you know, I really do have less and less tolerance for it over time. And, you know, I have on a number of occasions made people around me just stop and look at me. There was an incident at my work the other day where this guy was talking about how he had gotten harassed by cops. He was getting harassed because he was known as being a drug dealer. He didn't have any drugs on him, and then there was really nothing they could do to him, but they were harassing him because they're cops, you know? And one of my coworkers started trying to defend the cops. Like, well, what do you expect? They know that you're breaking laws. And it's like, well, do you believe that those laws are just? Well, no, I don't believe that those laws are just. So you believe that it's okay for a police officer to harass a citizen for a law that isn't just? Well, yeah, that's their job.
Well, at least they're being truthful.
I don't understand these people. Like, how do you think it is okay to enforce an immoral law? How do you think that that's okay? How do you think that that makes that person moral?
Well, you have to assume they're not moral. It's just their job to be immoral.
And I get to the point where I really honestly just look at people and are like, do you even listen to what you say? Are you even paying attention to the words that are coming out of your mouth? Like, have you ever thought about anything?
Well, you know, the problem there is that so often people fail to follow basic logic when they think something through, and they'll accept something based on what somebody else said or based on some preconceived notion that they've already got or some fear that they have, but they'll not take it step by step through and analyze it and say, now, does this make sense? Is this, why am I believing this? This thing here that I believe, why do I believe that? And they don't go through and analyze it piece by piece like that and take it apart. What you mentioned to me about a survivalist that you had a disagreement with, and it's kind of the same thing. It's assuming ideas are true just based on the fact that you believe them.
And, you know, when you talk to them, that's almost always their first response, especially like the person that I was talking about with the survivalist. His biggest argument whenever I would bring something up is, well, you don't know what you're talking about. I've done a lot of research. You don't know what you're talking about. And it's like, well, okay, I get that you've done a lot of research, but I'm saying that it's incorrect. You know, like, here, this is something, have you thought about it? Well, I've done a lot of research. Yeah, okay, I get that, but have you thought about this one particular? Trust me, I've probably been to all the websites you've been to just the same. But just because they put it on the internet does not mean that it's true.
Yeah, and specifically what we're talking about is, like, you know, so often in the survivalist movement, you get this small almost like a checklist. Like, do you have a bug out bag? Check. Do you have a first aid kit? Check. Do you have a bag of beans? Check. Do you have, you know, a secret bunker? Check. Do you have, and they go down the line, and you have to have all these things within this certain, do you have this specific type of gun? If you don't, what are you, stupid? You know?
Yeah.
And in reality, there is such a wide variety of ways to prepare for the different things that might, the different scenarios and things that could go wrong in one area can't go wrong in another area. You know, right. So to pigeonhole yourself into one thing and assume that anything that goes wrong, this is my plan A and there is no plan B. You're just asking for trouble.
And here's what gets me particularly. I don't want to turn this into the Let's Dash Survivalists podcast because I don't really feel that way. But I have a lot of issues, particularly in the let's make a fortress and hunker down and we have 10 million years worth of food here and we have all the guns and ammunition we could ever need and nobody can come and get on our land, you know. Yes, they can. Like, once again, we have this idea that the government magically will follow protocol of civilization.
Right.
And it will not. So that's a flawed principle to begin with. You know, if the government doesn't like you enough, they will come onto your property and they will kill you. And it doesn't matter how well fortified you are. Look at Ruby Ridge. Look at Waco. It doesn't matter. They are better at it than you are. Not to mention there has never in the history of humanity been a fortress or bunker or city or wall that couldn't be broken eventually. At some point, all of them were broken into. Yes, some of them it took thousands of years. But it happened. You know, whereas, yes, it's scattered and yes, it's, you know, it doesn't have a history because it doesn't have state-sponsored histories, which are the only histories that happen because there's really no other point
in recording it.
Yeah, there's no point in recording history other than to glorify the state. There's a tremendous amount of point in learning the mythology and the tales and the wisdom of history. And all of those things are rich in tradition in non-state areas, but not so much in the written, historical, day-to-day life kind of thing.
Yeah, you think about somebody like the people of Zomia. I haven't said the word in a while. Zomia, if I recall. I'll look it up while I'm talking. But these are the people of upland Southeast Asia. And even today, there are some societies living, stateless societies, hidden away in the mountains of Southeast Asia. The groups are shrinking very, very quickly. Yeah, Zomia, Zomia. But they have traditionally survived stateless by avoiding contact with state-based societies, most often by moving, not by creating a mountain fortress and trying to defend it.
Exactly.
That just, you know, it draws them in. It draws statists like, you know, like bees to honey.
To the point where almost always, the way that I look at it is, if you want to see what is effective at hurting the state, what you need to do is find out what the state hates. What is the first thing that the state always goes against and attacks and despises? And it's always a nomadic culture, because a nomadic culture poses a massive threat to an organized state.
Nomadic cultures tend to be stateless.
Fortresses don't. Fortresses are not high on the priority list. But nomadic cultures are.
Yeah, nomadic cultures tend to be stateless, and they tend to be very fluid. And they're hard for the government to tax. They're hard for them to manipulate. They're hard for them to control. This is why the government likes for you to carry and have with you at all times identification that tie you to a location.
Exactly. Then, what's your address? That's one of the first questions. What's your address? Why do I have to have an address? Me. I have me right here. But that's, you can't survive like that. In modern culture, you can't not have an address.
Well, I think we've just about bumped up against our time frame. So it's been good having you back on the show.
Yay. Maybe we can do this again before I leave Virginia, North Carolina, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and shout out if you are in the North Carolina E area, in the Charlotte area, and you want to come hang out and go to the Renaissance Festival and support a lot of really cool local artists, you can come out and see us. I'll be the person yelling that I have chocolate.
Where's that located at?
That's in Huntsville, North Carolina.
Do you know if they have a website?
Yes, it's the Carolina Renaissance Festival, if you Google that.
Cool.
I'm sure it will be the first thing to come up.
Okay, and so I don't suppose anybody takes Bitcoin out there, do they?
You know, I'm working on it. I'm really working on it. I just began taking Bitcoin. I take Bitcoin. If anyone wants to give me some Bitcoin, I've got a wallet.
Cody Wilson, the inventor of the printable plastic gun, is working on a new invention that is called, what is it called? Something like the dark wallet. I think it's called the dark wallet. That is essentially invisible. So like you have a situation where the Dread Pirate Roberts, the famous hacker Dread Pirate Roberts that got shut down not long ago with the Silk Road.
Yeah.
The FBI has his wallet. They can't crack it, but they have it. Eventually they,
right.
You know, they might be able to get him into a position where he gives it up for some kind of plea deal or something like that. But
right.
At this point they have his wallet. But the dark wallet that Cody is working on, and I put this in a link in the previous, it's not a podcast, but it was the previous page on Bad Quaker. So you can just scroll down at badquaker.com and find it. But anyway, this dark wallet will be invisible so let's say if the FBI were to bust the Dread Pirate Roberts, but instead of having a normal Bitcoin wallet, he had a dark wallet. They wouldn't know they had it, and he could recover it anytime he wanted to.
Oh, wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, you can't crack what you can't see. You can't break into what you don't know exists.
This is true.
Well, Kai, thanks for coming back on the show with me. It's been fun talking to you. I've got a little doggy here that is telling me it needs to get outside, though, so I better let you go, and I better help her along.
All right. It's been good talking to you again.
And folks, thanks for listening today. And remember to visit badquaker.com, where liberty is our mission. Thanks a lot, folks.